Okay, we're going to call this meeting to order. As far as the first order of business here, we'll take up approval of the minutes from the 23rd of February. Representative Hilty will move the minutes. All those in favor, thank you, Representative. All those in favor of approving the minutes signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, no. The rules or the amendment is the minutes are approved. Thank you, sir. Representative Hackbarth, welcome to your committee. Would you like to introduce your bill, and do you want to move the bill first?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I would move House File 519 be recommended to pass and referred on to the full Regulated Industries Committee.
Representative Hackbarth, the proper motion would be to lay it over and for possible inclusion in the policy omnibus bill.
Wonderful.
And with that, Representative Hackbarth, do you want to proceed and tell us what your bill is and what it does?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, the bill is a Texas Hold'em bill. It's simply, it's not a gaming bill or a gambling bill. It doesn't have anything to do with that. It's just the issue of playing the game of Texas Hold'em and including it in other in with other games that are socially acceptable according to statute to be played at in the tournament format. And we had an opportunity to play this game up in St. Cloud a couple of weeks ago. And what we did was we had a game of Texas Hold'em. There was no money exchanged anywhere along the line. We played Texas Hold'em, and whoever the winner was at the end won a tournament winner T-shirt. And that's basically all this bill is about, is allowing this game to be played as a social game, along with other games such as that are listed in the bill that are already current law: cribbage, scat, sheephead, bridge, euchre, pinochle, gin, 500, smear, or whist. And it would just include Texas Hold'em in amongst those games that you could play in the tournament format. And it doesn't have anything to do with gaming or gambling. That's pretty much what the bill does, Mr. Chairman, and we'd stand up for questions, and I also have someone here to testify on the bill.
Okay. Representative Hackbar, thank you. I kind of thought we might have a deck of cards here and an exhibition of some type. Or
Maybe we can do that.
Okay. Mr. Bischoff, would you please state your name for the tape and tell us who you represent and share your knowledge here on this bill?
My name is David Bischoff, and I own the Granite Bowl and Granite Bowl South in St. Cloud. This all started back in December of 2003. I was sitting at home with my children and my wife watching the World Poker Tour, wondering, you know, is this something that I could turn into a promotion for my bar? Did a little bit of internet research on the Minnesota statutes. Wasn't really too sure whether it qualified under there or not. I talked to my partners in my business, and we decided to get our attorney's opinions. And our attorney came back and said that as long as there was no entry fee and we were giving minimal prizes like T-shirts and hats, that their opinion was that there shouldn't be any problem with this. So I ordered chips and cards and set a date to start, did very minimal advertising. The morning of the first day of the tournament, when I got to the bowling center, we had over 10 or 15 calls for people, what time is this whole thing going to start? I had 3 emails on my email. I was really thinking the first day I might have 8 or 10 people there. We ended up having 75 people the first day. We were only had enough room for 40, ended up turning 35 people away, and very surprised at the turnout for it. We ran it for 3 months, and then I received a call from the Minnesota Department of Public Safety telling me that what I was doing was illegal. I spent about half an hour or 45 minutes on the phone with the Department of Public Safety, and they just didn't convince me that I was doing anything wrong. So I talked to my partners again, and we decided to get more attorneys' opinions, and we actually went to 3 other attorneys to get opinions, and they all came back the same thing. As long as we're not charging an entry fee, we're not doing anything wrong with any laws, so we decided to continue playing. July 19th, the state came in and raided the bowling center, the Free Texas Hold'em, with 20 police officers from St. Cloud, and they came in with their guns drawn and quickly put them away, and they held the people for 2.5 hours and confiscated all the chips and cards. And so we did not play again after that and waited for the county attorney to make their decision. It took like 3 or 4 months. The county attorney came back and decided that if I had done nothing wrong, they were not going to charge me with anything. And so we started playing again in January, and we get about 70 people a week. And the main reason for this bill is to kind of clarify the law and hopefully have somebody not go through what my business went through. I lost revenue, I figure it's a little over $30,000 in lost revenue. Attorney's fees were over $5,000, and I'm a very small business. That's a significant amount to me. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bischoff. Are there any questions for the testifier?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Hackworth.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. We just want to clarify, too, that we believe that it's legal at this time, and the county attorney did make that decision that it was legal, and that's why they're continuing to play in St. Cloud. And we just want to clarify the law. That's mainly what we're trying to get at, is clarify the law. Put the Texas Hold'em in amongst these social games that are played in tournament style, and just make it very clear that this is something that's accepted.
Okay, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Westerberg. Well, I'd like to hear from Frank Ball as to why public safety did this raid and instructed whomever to show up there and hold these people hostage.
Is Mr. Ball in the audience? Frank, would you like to, why don't we entertain other further questions for the testifier we have here, and then we'll go on to Frank here in a minute. Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a question for Representative Hackworth, which is, I believe that this game is played in this way in other states. Is that correct? And do you have any? Have you done any research into how that has gone? Has there been any company problems with these tournaments in other states that hold them?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hilty, I have not done any research in that regard, but I know there are other states that do allow it, but I haven't done any research in that regard.
Mr. Chair, my only concern about this would be that poker is kind of a different game than those that are specified here, and it does provide more opportunities for betting. The reason I raised the initial question is that I was wondering if anyone had experienced any kind of side activity that's connected with these kinds of tournaments.
There's some side activity that goes on. I found out in the game alone, Representative Hilty, I had the privilege of participating in the tournament up in St. Cloud, and to my surprise, I found out that it's seven card isn't just simply a seven card game, that there are additional side bets that occur within the game itself. The unusual thing is the highest hand might not end up winning the most chips in any particular round. And so the game is a little more complicated than I had thought it would be, but I did find it to be extremely entertaining and a lot of fun. Just to give you a couple of my thoughts on the game, although it's done on an individual basis, we found it to be a team concept, rooting on the House of Representatives against the Senate in the game, and we all kind of got behind our chief author of the bill here, who probably, I'll let you mention the outcome of that tournament, Tom. So would you like to add any other comments, sir?
Well, I did win the tournament.
Now you have the T-shirt.
Yeah, here's the T-shirt. This is what you win when you play a tournament, Texas Hold'em. You win a free T-shirt. That's what we want.
Well, any other questions for the testifier? With that, we'll call Mr. Ball to the stand here, witness table.
Thank you.
And Mr. Ball, would you like to begin with a few comments, or would you like to take questions right away?
Well, I could start out with, you have the right to remain silent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Frank Ball. I'm the Director of Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement for the State of Minnesota. I work for Public Safety, Commissioner Campion. I appreciate the gentleman's comments, but all those comments that he's are making were in reference to a criminal investigation. We were requested by the St. Cloud Chief of Police to come up and assist him in a gambling investigation. And I think I'll reserve that those remarks about that specific incident to the Court of Laws up in Stearns County. He is correct. The county attorney decided not to prosecute, but she decided not to prosecute on the facts that were in front of her, when in fact our agents did observe when they were done playing the Texas Hold'em tournaments, they started their own tournaments in the back of the bar with real money. And that's where the complaints were originated from. So what we're talking about here isn't a fun game in a specific incident, maybe where you folks played that was fun and it was amusement and it was very controlled and regulated. What we're talking about is gambling. We're talking about poker in bars where it was specifically outlawed by the legislature years ago. And there were some exceptions to that, and the exception was the private and social bet. Specifically up north, in the cold, cold winters, they had games such as cribbage, scat, sheephead, bridge, euchre, pinochle, gin 500, and smear or whist, half of those which I've never heard of before. But they were social games where people would sit around and play these games in service organization and bars and homes and what have you. Those were exempted. All other forms of gambling were outlawed, and a prohibition was set out by the legislature to the point where it became so widespread abuses that they put it into the criminal statutes, not just into the regulatory statutes. And that's where it remains today. And that's where the authority we come from to do criminal investigations and working with the law enforcement agencies. The private and social bet comes into play, and I'm citing from a brochure that we hand out here, is that the important thing to remember about a private social bet is that it cannot be part of an organized, commercialized, or systematic gambling. The owner of the location of the social bet cannot derive any profit from the bet, organize regular occasions for such bets, or advertise their occurrence. Potentially, any gambling that occurs in a business establishment could constitute illegal gambling because the owner of the establishment derives the indirect benefit of increased patronage. Now, in one of 87 counties, the county attorney has stated that this was lawful in the information that she had in front of her. There's 86 other prosecuting authorities that may or may not feel the same way. We have statewide jurisdiction. In this particular bill that's in front of you, the Texas Hold'em, we testified at the Senate version, they added an amendment to that of putting the decision to have these types of tournaments, just Texas Hold'em tournaments, at the discretion of the local municipality or the local jurisdiction. And we assisted in that regard. We don't want to be the Grinch that stole a good time, and nor do we want to be portrayed as people with guns putting people up against the wall and pregnant women held at gunpoint. That was not our intent, and that certainly is not the intent of our agency at Public Safety. We were assisting the police department like we do on any other occasions involving what they thought would be an impropriety of the law. This was discussed at the Senate, and I think it passed. Senator Kleist gave a good presentation on what his bill involved. We support that. We support anything that they want to do in their communities as long as they have community control. But I just want to make sure that as the law is written, these small social and private bets started out as something real small, and now they're into liquor establishments. There's a dichotomy here is that our division was joined at the hip about 4 or 5 years ago by the legislature, and we are also the license, we are the license grantor for all licensed alcohol establishments, over 6,000 licensees in the state of Minnesota. And we regulate the wholesale, manufacture, and retail liquor establishments. And so now we're investigating criminal activities that take place in a bar, and we also regulate the license authority for the liquor side. Both of these industries are regulated industries, and obviously for reasons. And this particular Texas Hold'em that's bringing it is fun, all those things that you did say. But the legislature is the one that sets policy. And if they want to have this in the establishments, then we'll certainly act accordingly.
Well, Mr. Ball, as you were giving your testimony there, one of the things I caught was basically that you talked about it could not derive any benefit to the person putting on the tournament. But the legislation, the way I read it, it says any direct benefit. And could you comment on that from your perspective?
Mr. Chair, the way we make the analysis of a gamble is that if there's three elements, you have a gamble, and that's chance, consideration, and prize. The chance would be obviously from a gamble, random pick. The consideration is it costs something to play. And, of course, the final determination is prize. Chance, consideration, prize. You eliminate any one of those three elements, and you do not have a gamble. Hence, when they talk about coming in, it doesn't cost anything to play. The first 40 people in are given some money, like Monopoly money. I think that's the way they spell it out. And at the end of the play, nothing is of any value. They may get a T-shirt or they may get a hat or something. So if they've eliminated the first thing, which is consideration, then they don't have a gamble. And we understand that. However, in some jurisdictions, they take consideration as being consideration for patronage. They take consideration that a poker chip has value if you can get something at the end for that. We don't determine the consideration. That's up to the courts. In some jurisdictions, they take this a little bit, ratchet this up a little bit higher. On this particular case that is in front of you, is that there was actually some betting that was taking place that was not private social. It was as a result of a Texas Hold'em tournament. That's how the police department looked at it, and that's how our agency looked at it. Unfortunately, it went into the county attorney. Again, this one specific case. We now are dealt with a number of, since the popularity of Texas Hold'em has just been unbelievable, the card club in Canterbury Park, where you've authorized lawful forms of poker, is unprecedented. It's been so successful. We're inundated with calls of Texas Hold'em if they can have it for fundraising events, and the list goes on and on and on. So we're just kind of waiting to see what comes out of this legislative session with the types of gambling that takes place. Back to your original question, chance, consideration, prize, those are the three parameters we go by. If you eliminate one of those, you're probably not in that illegal area. If you start adding it to the other way, you're getting into the illegal area. The problem that licensee holders of liquor establishments have, if they go over the line and their patronage does something illegal in the lines of gambling within their establishment and they have knowledge of it, they're jeopardizing not only their liquor license, they're jeopardizing their lawful gambling license that they have from the Minnesota Gambling Control Board. That's the risk that we tell these people who call, is that under your scenario, you may be lawful. But if this goes further and becomes a gambling hall, you run the risk of losing your license to establish your license for dispelling alcohol or liquor and the lawful forms of gambling. I hope that kind of clears that up.
Okay, thank you. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Westerberg. Mr. Ball, the criteria that you've given, is that in your rules? Because that's not found in this statute that you cited of chance, prize, etc.
Mr. Ball?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, it's in the criminal statute under what constitutes a bet, what not a bet, and a I'll try to get the statute for you. I believe your house research might have that right there handy.
Elizabeth, can you help us out here?
Mr. Chair, 609.75 subdivision 2 defines a bet as a bargain whereby the parties mutually agree to gain or loss by one to the other of specified money, property, or benefit. That would be the consideration dependent upon chance, although the chance is accompanied by some element of skill. So that does refer to the gain or loss would be the prize, I guess, and then the consideration is the money, property, or benefit, and chance is specifically mentioned.
Thank you, Ms. Long. Chair Westerberg.
Representative Erickson.
Mr. Ball, is there a criminal charge against Granite Ball and Mr. Bischoff presently?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, no. There is no criminal charges brought against that.
So, Mr. Chair and Mr. Ball, so the St. Cloud Police Department thought there was something illegal occurring at Mr. Bischoff's establishment and called you in to do a criminal investigation?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, that's correct.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
And Mr. Ball, I saw Mr. Bischoff shaking his head, though, in response to no, when you mentioned that there was illegal activity occurring after the tournament. What evidence do you have of that? And if there was, why wasn't there a criminal charge?
Mr. Ball.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, this was a criminal investigation. Do you want me to testify how it would be? I'm not sure where you want me to go with this.
It's not necessary. As far as the scope of the bill and what we're trying to accomplish here today, that wouldn't be necessary. Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Ball or Representative Hackworth, if this bill becomes law, who would have the responsibility for enforcing this? Is there a mechanism whereby we would check up on what activity is taking place at establishments that conducted these tournaments?
Which one of you wants to take that one on?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hilty, I would imagine it would be the Department of Public Safety. Maybe Mr. Ball can answer that better than I can, but I don't know. Is there somebody going around checking up on 500 games and Smear and Euchre and Scat and all these other games? I don't think so.
Right. Mr. Ball, do you want to add anything to that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty, it would probably fall under our jurisdiction if there were complaints of illegal gambling taking place. We would follow up. We're a police agency, much like your local police departments. We're reactive in nature, try to do some proactive work. The reaction means that if a citizen or somebody complains about a criminal activity, would assign a complaint to that. It's called an ICR, and we would follow up on that investigation at some level. What they have discussed at the Senate is that this would be deferred to local authority for the person wishing to have a Texas Hold'em tournament at a licensed facility would get permission from that jurisdiction, like a city council. And that was discussed, and I don't have a copy of that amendment here, but that looked many of these, of the A7 counties, the jurisdictions, like I was addressing before, they may interpret this gambling law a little bit differently. And it would be up to the local jurisdiction what they would actually go forward with their prosecution. So it would make sense that the local mores would come into place there.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Ball, what you're saying basically is that in the absence of a complaint, probably anything that wanted to go on would.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty, pretty much. It takes place until it's called to our attention, and typically on a number of illegal gambling infractions, specifically like with the Gambling Control Board, usually a telephone call with some educational will straighten that out, especially in the licensed facilities, the liquor facilities.
Thank you.
Representative Zeller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Ball, I was curious when we were talking about you're the licensing authority for liquor licenses and also for some of these either private bets that are illegal or private betting that's going on. So see if my rationale is following now. If I'm a bar owner, and since it's March Madness now, the Final Four tournament's coming up, and everybody will get that big sheet with all the things on it. If a bar owner overhears a couple of folks saying, oh, geez, I lost Louisville and Kentucky, and you know as a bar owner that they're gambling, by your rationale, are they now endangering their liquor license? Because they I think you'll see bars all over that will say, come watch the Final Four in our bar. You know, I can probably pick a half a dozen in my district that would want people to come into their establishment to watch the Final Four tournament. And my second question is, you said it was the St. Cloud Police Department that was behind the investigation. Is it the idea then to go in guns drawn, and the way the bar owner described? Because I find that a little far afield and awfully, awfully over the top.
Mr. Wall.
Mr. Chair, Representative, your first question. There is an exemption in the gambling law called a private and social bet. However, it distinguishes that it can be for food or beverage. And nothing's to say that if you're out at one of your drinking establishments and you want to bet on the Vikings, for example, or whatever you wish to bet on, that would be classified as a private social bet. The boards you're referring to are sports boards, and those are illegal. They're illegal to possess, and typically the bars hold those for friends. They call that private social. If we get calls from a competing bar, for example, that said they've got sport boards in their bars, typically a phone call will put a stop to that. If it's widespread and the sport boards get up to that $10,000 mark, where they get quite costly, we would send an agent in to investigate that, and we would seize and charge that person. If it was facilitated by the bar, yes, the bar, even if had knowledge of their employees conducting that type of activity, would jeopardize their license for their bar and their lawful gambling license. But the private and social bet is what you're making reference to. But sport boards are all illegal. The second question you had, typically when you get into the gambling laws, they get, as you can see, very complicated, and sometimes they're difficult to investigate because they're amongst social groups. And if it becomes broader than that to a commercialized operation, typically the CLIO, the chief law enforcement officer of a jurisdiction, would contact our agency of public safety and request assistance in those investigations. And that's what took place in this particular incident. And we sent an undercover officer into this establishment. He witnessed a number of things, went to the judge and got a search warrant, and contacted the chief of police, and the chief of police coordinated the efforts with the agent. And it was St. Cloud police officers that were in there. And I can't, I wasn't there, so I don't know the circumstances. All I know is that when they execute a search warrant, sometimes that can get pretty nasty in drinking facilities, and I'm sure they used due caution.
Representative Zeller.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate the comments about the boards, because I think we're dancing an awfully, awfully fine line. Mm-hmm. If you promote, come to my establishment and watch the Final Four, I think that's you're going to spend a lot of time investigating thousands of bars in Minnesota for bars and restaurants, because I think you're, and if you need us to spell it out more definitively, good luck, but I think that there's an awfully fine line of promoting come to my bar, my establishment, watch the game, versus putting up the sports board. Because if you put up the board that has who won and who lost, are you not then promoting that? Just because you're not technically keeping the money in the pot behind the bar, but you're promoting that Final Four board that's up on there. And it could be a Miller Lite advertised board. I just think it's an awfully fine line, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Ball, we put you in a really tough position, don't we?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative, I guess the easy answer for that is we're about fraud. We're about theft. We're about cheating. We're about breaking the law. The legislature set the parameters for us to operate under. We operate under the laws that you gave us. Oftentimes in these drinking establishments, the bar, the proprietor, holds the money. And more often than not, the money is stolen, and they come to their local jurisdiction to help them with a theft investigation. When they find out that it's unlawful gambling, then they put themselves, there's a real dichotomy for these people to make those decisions. It's fun, it's amusement, but there was such widespread abuse of that in years past. The legislature prevented that from happening in bars. In fact, a little bit of history here, they had video games that had these, if you probably remember, you might be a little bit too young, but they had this Pac-Man, this boing, boing thing that went back and forth. They started betting on these games in bars. And they gave our division the authority to regulate these and license these to the point where the technology back then, they turned them into video poker machines with a switch on the back. We still have a warehouse full of those. And they abolished all those. They were fun, amusement, and the bars would like that type of activity back, but the legislature prevents that from happening.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, hopefully the last question, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Westerberg. Mr. Ball, did you have any conversations with Mr. Bischoff or anyone at Granite Bowl in regard to the continuance of Texas Hold'em tournaments or activity to, you know, to kind of clarify the law for them in spite of the fact that, you know, they had checked with numerous lawyers?
Mr. Ball.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, I've had a number of I've never met Mr. Bishop, but I have had conversations with him on the phone. There's a number of bars that have contacted us, and they want to run a Texas Hold'em tournament, much like they did in Stearns County. We caution them if they fit that same criteria that I explained earlier, with a show, chance, consideration, or prize, they could run the risk of being charged with a criminal event. There is some language being discussed at the legislature now. We'll see what this comes out at the end of the session, and we'll have to make a reassessment of that. A number of bars have called to see if what's legal and what's not legal. And we basically say poker's a betting game. They're just talking about specifically Texas Hold'em in this particular incident.
Okay, with that, Representative Hackbarth, do you have any closing comments?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I think we've heard a number of discussions here that tells us that we should be clarifying the law and saying that Texas Hold'em is one of these social games. There's not going to be any bets placed. There's no direct benefit to the establishments. So I don't know why we wouldn't put it in law and just say that this is one of the social games that you can use as a on a tournament basis, and make it very, very clear so there's no confusion. So I think that's why we need to have this bill here today, and it clarifies everything, and everybody can everything can be on the up and up.
Okay, well, thank you very much. We'll renew Representative Hackbarth's motion to lay House File 519 over for possible inclusion in the omnibus policy bill. And thank you very much for being here and the presentations.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members.
Okay. Representative Zeller. Representative, this is another clarifying bill.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and this is what I would consider a much easier clarifying bill. There's some information being passed out to you right now. That's the non-color version. I have the very colorful, glossy version with me if anyone would like to see that. Mr. Chairman, members, what House
File... Representative Zeller will put House File 791 before us. You'll move that for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Yes, and Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Thank you, and we notice that there's a DE1 amendment. Is that to your bill?
Mr. Chairman, no. It will not be in favor of the DE1 amendment, but no, that's not mine.
Please proceed with your testimony.
Sure, I'll give you just a brief description, and then I have Jerry Sweeney, who is a representative of the Sega Game Corporation, who is here with me as well. Basically, members, what has happened here is there's a game, and it's what's being passed out to you now by Sega. Very similar to if you go to I go to Champs up in Maple Grove, so it's right in my district and right down the street. There's a golden tee game there. Many of us who are golfers in the summer, in the winter, don't have the opportunity, so video games are a nice substitution. This game is very similar to that. The reason we're coming before you today is we have been, for some reason, viewed as a gambling or a game of chance. This is just a clarifier that this is a video game. You don't win anything dollar-wise, prize-wise. You don't even get a nice fancy T-shirt if you're the best jockey in Minnesota or the United States. You're just John Lesh, the best jockey in North America. It's only bragging rights alone. We are one state out of 50 that does not allow this game. In fact, the game works in downtown Minneapolis, which is part of Block E, had to have the games removed from their establishment. I don't know of any other in-state ones that have had to have them removed, but if you look on the back of the last page of that handout, there's a a little tiny little section on the bottom there. It has what the game actually is, how it's set up, how you sit and play at the game. I'll turn it over to Mr. Sweeney to give you the detailed basis, but again, this is a clarifier for something that is merely a video game that's being played just like many other video games in restaurants and bars.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Sweeney. Please state your name and tell us who you represent.
My name is Gerald Sweeney, and I represent Sega America. Thank you, Representative Westerberg. I appreciate the opportunity to address the committee today. The reason we're here is because I represent Sega, and Sega is the producer of this product, Derby Owners Club. And what happened here that brings me to St. Paul is that back in July of 2004, there were Derby Owners Club games at Canterbury Racetrack. Now, this is not something that we had anything to do with or that I had any involvement in, but apparently what happened, as I understand the facts, is that in an abundance of caution, there was a request made to determine, because of the racetrack being a highly regulated industry, whether there was anything about the presence of this product on their premises that caused any concern, which resulted in the Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement Division coming out and reviewing the product on site. There was a letter issued on July 8, 2004 by Mr. Ball, the Director of Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement Division, to Mr. Randy Sampson at Canterbury Park, which merely indicates that the products were determined to be in violation of the definition. The letter says, "This is to inform you that the Sega Derby Downs machine meets the definition of a video game of chance as found in Minnesota Criminal Statutes 609.75 subsection 8. Because it is a video game of chance, possession of this device is illegal. The only exceptions are those devices possessed by a manufacturer, distributor that is licensed by the division, a device located in a person's dwelling, residence, for amusement or display purposes, and those operating a tribal gaming facility." This product is, in fact, a video game like any other video game that you would find. It does not award prizes. It is not a gambling device. It doesn't depict gambling. It doesn't depict pari-mutuel betting. It is a role-playing game, and if you look at the material that has been provided by Representative Zellers, there is a description here on how to play, and what it's called is it's called a role-playing game in which what occurs in the course of the game is there's breeding, where you put your money into the game. There's a screen that comes up, a selection screen. You pick a couple of horses. Those become the parents of the horse that you then create. You name your horse. You choose your silks. And each horse has unique capabilities, which are described in this manual. And those include characteristics that are described in the manual. What happens then is that you participate in a pre-race routine, which involves training, which involves solo training, cooperative training, solo pool training, rest, feeding, etc. And what happens is that the level of skill that you develop in the course of creating a competitive horse causes your chances of prevailing ultimately in the racing concept of this game to be greater. So the end result is that this is a competitive video game. There's another game that is out presently, or was previously out, that I can think of, a video game by Rage called Rocky. In that game, there's a training sequence where Rocky, the Rocky Balboa character, goes to a gym. He trains. As a result of his training, his capacity to increase his boxing skills increases. There's a game out by Midway Games called Ready to Rumble Boxing. It has the same capacity. You can go to the training room. You can acquire weights. You can lift weights. You can do that sort of thing. And the capacity of your character to fight competitively in a ring with the other selected character increases. This is a very similar concept to that game. I was interested in Mr. Ball's comments, which I think are apropos. I heard him say that basically a gambling device or a gambling event involves chance, consideration, and prize, and if you don't have any one of those, it's not a gambling event. There is no prize awarded in this product whatsoever. The other thing I heard was that his department is involved in theft, fraud, and cheating. There is no theft, fraud, or cheating associated with this product. There was no theft, fraud, or cheating associated with its removal from the state of Minnesota. This product is played in almost every other state in the United States. There is no other similar issue to this elsewhere within the United States. And the reason I'm here is because I'm a neophyte lobbyist. This is my first time out and perhaps my last, but I represent this client directly. And when this game was tossed out of the state of Minnesota, they were very upset about it because, as you can tell from this brochure, there's a lot of research and development. It's a capital-intensive product. It's a very sophisticated electronic product, and it is a terrifically successful amusement game in the United States. And the idea that it's not being played here in Minnesota was so striking to them that they wanted me to come here and to do whatever was necessary to attempt to get this game appropriately placed back here without threat of criminal prosecution for the creation and use of a typical video game. That's why I'm here. And so the way we elected to do this was we understood that there was a letter sent out by Mr. Ball back in October of 2004, in which he appears to acknowledge that there was an ambiguity in the existing definition of video game of chance. We have tried to address that in a way that eliminates the ambiguity and permits the reinstatement of our client's video game product back in the state of Minnesota. It's not our interest to come to Minnesota and adjust the gaming laws of the state of Minnesota. We have absolutely no interest in that whatsoever. We are not in the gambling business. It is not a gaming device. It will not become a gaming device. It is not intended to be a gaming device. And so the purpose of what we have tried to accomplish is to eliminate the ambiguity through the change in the verbiage of the existing definition of video game of chance so that there will be no ambiguity and it will be appropriate without question for our product to be reinstated here in Minnesota.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Yes, sir. Are there any questions? Representative Atkins.
Thank you. I guess to the author of the bill, the language is a bit confusing. And by the way, the Derby Owners Club, I got no problem with it whatsoever. It sounds like a game of skill. It sounds like a lot of fun. I doubt that there's vast amounts of money that will ever be wagered on it. But having said that, the language of the bill, I'm assuming for more so purposes of legislative history, if nothing else, that nowhere in here is there any desire to make games like poker, blackjack, craps, high-low, roulette, any of those other types of games any more legal than they currently are now, correct?
Representative?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Atkins, no, in no way. And I would raise a little bit with you that you've not seen Buttercup Run yet, and once you see my horse run, you may rethink. But no, this is in no way. This is merely a video game that 49 other states, or a vast majority of other states, have had. And again, if you've ever, and maybe if, well, maybe 5 or 10 years ago, if I went to the Mall of America, there's an entire game room down there that has all kinds of. I mean, you can go into one store that is literally just of NASCAR cars where you go and you race. There's a big room and the seats shake, and mm-hmm. you can do all kinds of things very similar to this. It's just for whatever purposes the horses were thrown out. But no, I have no intention whatsoever. We'll get into that much later. I have no intention of getting into the middle of that process.
Mr. Chair, Representative Zillers, that will be the most colorful legislative history that the Supreme Court will ever have an opportunity to read, I think.
I hope
by the way, I want mono on mono, a little golden tea. Secondly, you're aware of what are called skill stop games? These are, by definition, I guess, where a player pushes a button to stop spinning reels. And the reason I bring it up to put it on the record is because my understanding is that there was a similar situation in Ohio. I think it was Chuck E. Cheese or something like that had certain games that were being prohibited. New laws made, and unfortunately for Ohio, they've now been inundated with these skill stop, you know, where the reels spin. And it's alleged that it is a skill to be able to push that button at just the right time in order to have the reels line up, and then you win. Is it fair to say that the intent of your bill is not to allow for skill stop games either?
Representative Zeller.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Atkins, it is. And if you, like, going through that the pre-race routine, you look in there, it's a pretty skill-intensive. I mean, you have to do all those things, the feeding, the training, the retirement, whatever. It's very skill-intensive, but no, it is in no way my intention at all to get into skill-stop games as well.
Okay. Chair, just one thing.
Representative Atkins.
And I may have some enforcement questions, but the final question. You pulled out in the language section 2, I guess it's just it's subdivision 8, sub 2, about game credits and replays, contains a meter or device that records unplayed credit or replays. And perhaps Mr. Ball is maybe better able to talk about that one, but it's my understanding that if you don't have that, that can potentially lead to possible cheating or rewarding of players, because then they can go back, they can erase it, and so forth. I raise that more so as an issue just to see if you've thought about it and kind of what your thought pattern has been in terms of why you pulled it out, and if you haven't thought about it, perhaps if there's ways to get it, what may be an issue for our friends in enforcement.
Sure, and I'll actually let Mr. Sweeney, there's a good lawyer in the house, never stand in their way.
Mr. Sweeney.
Thank you. The reason that was pulled out was, to give you the state of how this all came about, we were up here and we met with the, and I can never remember the reviser, I can never remember his title, the reviser. He came down and we literally made the amendments while we were sitting there discussing this here in the office building. I cannot imagine that there are not currently throughout the state of Minnesota a number of video games that are played in which there are game credits or replays or credits that are awarded for certain levels of play. Pinball games typically have that. Now, I don't know what the intent of this was in terms of its relationship to gambling per se, but my view would be it would be hard for me to believe that presently within the state of Minnesota there aren't multiple pinball games of some sort that have credits that result from play. So when we were making the amendment, it seemed to me that this would probably be inconsistent with the current state of affairs anyway and not typical for video game or pinball game products that are currently being used. That is the sum and substance of the reason why it was removed. There is no motivation or no intent to change anything. As I mentioned before, really the only reason we're here, and I was coming up with bad metaphors, but this morning I came up with a really bad one, and that is I was saying that what we are, we're so out of the gaming aspect of this, and the reason for us to come here and restructure anything associated with Minnesota's gambling laws is somewhat ironic, but the analogy I was drawing this morning is that we're sort of like a dolphin caught in a tuna net, and it's sort of like we had to get out of it, sort of restructure the design of the net before we could be entirely free of this. We're not in the gaming business in terms of gambling, but this element to me from common experience seems inconsistent with what the state of reality is, I would assume, in Minnesota and in the rest of the United States, but it's not anything that was tied to gambling per se in my mind.
Chair, thank you. Mr. Sweeney, Representative Zellers, thank you.
Well, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Westerberg. My question is for Mr. Ball.
Okay. Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I guess this is a question for Mr. Sweeney or perhaps for Ms. Long. I keep reading this bill, and I'm certainly in sympathy with its intent, but I cannot for the life of me understand how the language in the bill accomplishes the purpose that you apparently wish to accomplish, and I wish someone would explain that to me.
Can you help us?
Well, what my thought was that what technology evolves rapidly, and what I drew from this in terms of what the nature of the ambiguity is in the original act is that the assumption was made at one point in time that anything that simulates poker, blackjack, craps, high-low, roulette, or other gambling forms would necessarily be considered to be games of chance because electronically developed products that depict these incidents could not be games of skill. And so what we wanted to clarify was that games that are referred to in this fashion necessarily and inclusively have to also be games of skill, in order for them to not qualify as illegal gaming activities. In other words, if one is going to construe a typical or common gambling form to be horse racing, which is a concept I disagree with, but one that I heard advanced to me, the concept seemed confused in the way the bill was originally worded in that, okay, if you are depicting one of these events or a common form of gambling, inherent therein, it's a game of chance as opposed to a game of skill. It is possible that if you're going to broaden the definition of a common form of gambling and it's going or gaming and it's going to include horse racing, there are elements of horse racing that can make that game substantially a game of skill as opposed to a game of chance. And so therefore the clarification here needs to be that regardless of what the depiction is, particularly as it relates to horse racing, for example, the game itself, although it can be depicting a common form of gaming, if you choose to include horse racing in that, it's actually a skill-driven game and therefore shouldn't qualify as an illegal gaming device.
Does that help, Representative Hilty?
You know, what I'd like to do really is...
Well, frankly, no. I mean, I look at this, the change on line 11 is cross out gambling and insert forms of wagering, which seems to me to be saying essentially the same thing. And then the new language on lines 12 through 14 seems to me just to be another way of saying the language that's eliminated on lines 16 to 17. So I don't see how this is changing anything in any substantial way.
And not in a substantial way.
Unless it's just that it's eliminating the language on lines 18 and 19, which Mr. Sweeney explained a few minutes ago isn't really relevant to their purpose, but just thought it was a good idea. So I don't get it.
Well, we'll ask Representative Zellers for some more help here.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Hilty, part of that section was what was used in determining whether or not this was a game of chance. So by kind of, I didn't say eliminating the language to eliminate ourselves, it was just a clarification. Again, the intent of the bill was to, or I shouldn't say the intent, the original intent was that this is a game, it's a video game. It was that way until, but for the someone asking, are you sure that we're okay to have this? No, that's when we did. So when we went back to the some of the suggestions from the department before, with some of the language that they had suggested, this was a not only revisers but a departmental. And Mr. Ball may disagree with us now, or you know maybe will agree. But this was the best way to fix this with the revisers' office suggestion with the department's suggestions.
Well, let me make another
Mr.
comment.
Mr. Sweeney,
too. Thank you. Excuse me. When you look at this, and it says here in the top part, it says a video game of chance is a game or device that simulates one or more games commonly referred to, and then it enumerates them. Well, it would appear that inherent then in those games, they must therefore be games of chance. Below that, then, it says in line 16, the term also includes any video game having one or more of the following characteristics. It is primarily a game of chance and has no substantial elements of skill involved. There seems to be an inconsistency because it is possible, for example, that if you depict horse racing, but under this definition, if one wants to interpret, as I said before, horse racing as a gambling form, it's possible that that can be a skill-based game. But there appears to be the belief in the enactment of this original act that anything involving what might be considered a common gambling form is necessarily a game of chance as opposed to a game of skill, and that's not necessarily true.
Okay, members, any other questions, or we'll invite Director Ball to come to the stand and help clarify the issue further. Director Ball, please enlighten us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could just point out that I really feel like the Grinch that's stealing a good time. last week we were talking about rubber duck races, and I got beat up on that. And they passed that. All I can say is that we are your servant legislators. And as I go back, excuse me, a little bit back in history, again, gambling devices in bars were so widespread, abused. The money changing hand, real money changing hand, was not private and social. They had betting clubs. They were gambling houses. But the legislature at that time didn't just say we should probably deal with this. They prohibited everything. And they put this language in the criminal code, not rules, not just it's a good idea, not in the liquor laws, but in the criminal code. And that's where it remains today. In the criminal code, cops can only enforce what they have in the criminal codes, and we are reading this as what we thought the legislature intended at the time they passed it. Having said that, this gambling industry is nothing more than cash. Granted, it's entertainment, it's fun, it's all those things, but it's a cash cow. There's so much money being brought in by gambling, it's so popular, those people that are making money on it want to make more of it. There's opportunists at every door. We're inundated with phone calls. And like I said earlier this morning, there are more Indian casinos than I have agents. I have 12 agents to do all these things that you're asking us to do. So it's really important to know that this committee recognizes some of the wide, vast variety of things that we do over public safety. And again, we're about fraud, we're about cheating, we're about enforcing the laws that the legislature have had. We have a close working relationship with the amusement industry. The mayor of Bloomington, for example, Mr. Winstead, was a big gaming individual, and they have games, video games, all over the state of Minnesota. Redemption machines, skill stop machines that you're talking about, all these fun games. Were fun 15 years ago. The technology has grown so fast that you can get most anything downloaded on the internet and play these various type games in the privacy of your own home. And I don't want to even infer that we're going to start kicking in doors and seizing computers of private residences. That's where the private and social bet comes to place. But we've always had a good working relationship with the amusement industry. They would come and meet with us, and they'd show us their new devices. And we'd say, you know, this looks like it's really fun, but you should probably take it to the legislature and get approval for it. Well, that pretty much stops the conversation. Comes Derby Down. They approached us and said, here, we got this really cool idea. It's not horse racing, but it deals with horses, and you get bigger jockeys, smaller jockeys, better horse food, better this, better that. And we said, what a fascinating idea. This machine costs $100,000, and it's netting $5,000 in bars a month. They said, it's a really good idea. You should probably take it to the legislature and get it approved. And they said, well, we already have it in bars. I said, big mistake, because if we get a complaint on these, we'll have to react on it. And I'm going back to what we talked about first about this Texas Hold'em. We didn't seize any of these machines. We didn't want to damage a $100,000 machine and bring liability against the state. We knew they were out there, and we told them that they had to have it approved through the legislature or they're subject to seizure. It's kind of like, hello, you might want to get the thing out of here and get approved first. I call attention to sub 8. Well, I'll fast forward the general letter we put out, and these weren't threatening letters, by the way, folks. These were merely an industry advisory where we quoted the criminal code. And we call attention to sub 4 on 609-755 on a gambling device. And basically it says, and this goes with your casino nights and anything else involving other than lawful forms. And Mr. Chair, if I can just call attention, there are four forms of lawful gambling in the state of Minnesota, and this is our caveat speech. There's casino gaming that has been approved by the legislature. That's lawful. There's the lottery. That's Minnesota business, and that's lawful. There's horse racing at card club, paramutual wagering at Canterbury Park. That's lawful. And there's charitable gambling. That's lawful gambling. Those are the four main forms of lawfulized gambling, lawful gambling in the state of Minnesota, and the easy fix is anything else isn't. It's that simple, with the exception of your private, social, and some other issues.
Mr. Chair?
Director Ball, as far as, could you comment, it's our understanding, or my understanding, I guess, is that this is something that is legal in almost 49 other states or something, and is it a problem in the other states?
Mr. Chair, again, going back to my original remarks, most of these other states don't have criminal codes in the gambling part. They have cheats and thefts, but they look at this in a different light. In Minnesota, and we are probably unique, and it would have to be changed by the legislature to remove this from the criminal aspect of it. However, what you have put in the law basically states that the gambling device is something, which is specified, but it also goes down to video game of chance. And here is where the Derby Down has some problems. We worked with these folks last year, and basically what we told them is we do not have the authority to grant immunity. We don't have the authority. Legislature have not given us the authority to say we bless this machine, but we don't bless that machine. We just can read the language that is written. And your language states a video game of chance is a game or device. This is sub 8, by the way, Mr. Chair. Is a game of or device that simulates one or more games commonly referred to as poker, which is lawful, blackjack, which is lawful, craps is not, high-low is not, roulette is not, and other common gambling forms. Racing, horse racing is another common form of gambling. Sega has this in a car racing machine as well. We don't have any problem with that because they're not gambling. Horse racing is gambling, and therein lies the problem. If it simulates a common form of gambling, a lawful form of gambling in Minnesota, it cannot be played as that. It's a video game of chance.
Okay. Before we entertain any questions for Director Ball, could I call members' attention to the DE1 amendment that's in our packets here? I believe this is an amendment that was drafted by you, Director Ball.
Mr. Chair, I don't have that amendment, but I did bring the language that we did draft and worked with, I believe, one of the representatives. It was Mr. Fahey, if not mistaken.
We will not be voting on the amendment, but if you'd like to discuss the amendment at this time, I think that would be appropriate.
Mr. Chair, basically the discussion goes like this. We do not have the authority. Thanks, Brian. We have not been given the authority or have the authority to make a determination of what's legal, what's not legal, except what we go by in a criminal statute. But we had mentioned if there is a game out there that is that the manufacturer feels as though it's strictly entertainment and it would take a representative from somebody or some agency to determine that it's just a game for amusement, we could make that determination. I do not have the resources to go out and inspect new games that they want to put in drinking liquor establishments. And that's what we tried to explain to them, that nor can we make a determination if this is a gambling device or not. I'm not speaking specifically on the Derby Down machine. I'm speaking in generalities, is that this amendment that we came up with research basically states that, for a... the individual would bring a game forward, and we would charge them a fee to inspect, much like I'll use this skill stop machine. And we would determine that based on everything that we see, how it played, if it could be backbetted on, if it could be used in a larger venue, for example. And we'd make a determination that under the circumstances, under the conditions of this particular machine, we could make a determination. And we'd make that determination. The only thing we didn't put in there is the redress that they would have. What we've had in the past is a working relationship with the amusement industry that we'd said, no, this doesn't fit into the category, better luck next time. And they'd come back with something else or modify to it. This is really the first attempt they've had to give us authority to make a distinction if this is truly a gambling machine or not.
Thank you. Questions, Representative Atkins? Yes,
thank you, Mr. Chair. The operative question, I guess, you've seen the bill, Mr. Ball, 791. The language is interesting. As you read it, would that allow, for the purpose of what Representative Zellers has offered, would that allow for the Derby Owners Club to be played in Minnesota, based on your interpretation, how you read the language?
Mr. Ball.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I have not inspected this machine purposely, knowing that this would ratchet up to be kind of a big deal. I have sent agents to look at it, and the argument is, gee, it's a horse that eats hay and goes faster. My question was, at the outcome of whatever this machine does, is it a horse race? Yes, it is. Well, that's a lawful form of gambling in the state of Minnesota, and this simulates that. So would this do that? I don't know. It's a good start. The difficulty I have that you've entrusted in our division is that if this goes into a regulated industry establishment, a licensed facility, and they start having Derby Down Night, much like they have Texas Hold'em Nights, and they advertise this, do they then start doing wagering on the activity that's taking place on this amusement device? I mean, that's our world. That's how we think. And if that's the case, now you've got wagering that is going against the lawful forms of gambling, and that could induce a complaint and an investigation. Does this remedy the Derby Down? I don't know. I can't say, Mr. Chair. Representative
Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I'd have a suggestion or comment. The language, pardon the pun, but I'm going to use it anyway, seems like a bit of a muddy track.
Yes.
when it comes to what as I understand the mechanics of this committee, Mr. Chair, what we're going to do is put this for potential inclusion in an omnibus bill. And I might suggest that we get the parties together. We all know what the goal is, and that is to try to allow the Derby. I don't think I've heard any objection from anybody about this particular game. If that's the goal, I think we can probably clean up the language a little bit better with smart people like Ms. Long's help so that we do that without running the risk of then getting into skill stop games. And I know what the author's intent is, but the way I read it, I'm not totally convinced. I'm just afraid that somebody in Mr. Ball's position or enforcing it 20 years down the road may not know what Representative Sellers told the committee today. So I think if we sort of put our heads together, mostly Ms. Long, we can figure out a way to draft it so that it gets at allowing the Derby Owners Club to be played without going beyond that. That seems to be kind of the collective wisdom of this group.
Well said, Representative Atkins. Are there any other questions for the testifiers? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Westerberg. Mr. Ball, how long did this Sega game operate in Minnesota before it came to your attention?
Mr. Ball.
Mr. Chair, it was right about this time last year that session was in. I believe it was session was in place. That's where it really kind of ratcheted up, because we were talking with one of the legislatures about it would be a perfect game for Canterbury Park, for example. It would fit into that venue. And then we discovered that it was actually at Canterbury Park, and it was on their loading ramp. And it was that time that we suggested that this should be brought to the attention of the legislature for approval before we could react on it, and they removed it from that facility.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Mr. Ball, wasn't the game also found in places where young people play video entertainment spots? And had that been called to your attention, and did you do anything about that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, I believe somebody mentioned that this Sega game possibly could have been in Game World. It possibly could have been out at Joe Spencer's. I believe somebody had indicated that it was about four or five different sites. And we had stated that if we get a complaint on this game, it could possibly be contraband, and it would be subject to seizure and possible criminal charges brought within that jurisdiction. We didn't receive a complaint on it. There was much discussion because of the value of this machine, and we said it'd be a great machine, but it should be approved through the legislature first.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
And Mr. Ball, have you checked out to see if this is at Joe Spencer's bar?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, no, I have not.
Well, Mr. Chair and committee, I really struggle with your testimony, Mr. Ball, because it doesn't seem like you have anything conclusive to have brought this issue to such a crisis for our state. And, you know, reading the language in the criminal code, I don't know. I respect Mr. Atkins' comments, and we certainly need to work on this if we're going to move this bill forth, in light of the fact that he understands probably more than I do about lawyer language. But in this whole statute, it has been probably written by lawyers, and they put certain words in there for a reason, and I think you're almost overstepping your bounds in interpreting them. You're not a lawyer, and, you know, I just have to confess to you, I really struggle with what you've done in this industry and with this video game and the interpretation of our law, and that's where I'll leave it.
Okay, members, seeing no other questions here, would you like a final comment, Representative
Zeller? Sure, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Atkins, and I'll be happy to work with his lawyer anytime I get the opportunity. Again, this is primarily about allowing a video game to be played in our state. The primary reason why I had agreed to author the bill is that this is an attraction or a something that people go into an establishment. We have now cut out revenue from our business owners, and if we go down this path, we are then going to say to any video game, especially with the DE1 amendment, we're going to put in a fee system and then have a separate division that will go through approving what is and what is not a proper video game. And for my intentions here, that is way far above and beyond what we should be doing, not only as a legislature but as this committee. This is it's too far in a field and gone. And also, Mr. Chairman, there are a number of games that, if we are worried about the what ifs that could happen if Representative Atkins and I are playing that game of Golden Tee, and any other one of the committee members comes along and says, "I've seen Atkins swing, I'm betting on Zellers," are we now going to be in trouble? And is are the police, you know, the gaming police going to come in then and shut down that bar? That's really not the intention here, Mr. Chairman. We just want to make a video game that's played in many, a vast majority of other states, available to be played here in our, not only just our bars and restaurants, but in our video game arcades as well, because that's all this is a video game.
Thank you, Representative Zellers. Representative Hackbar, if you have a comment.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I don't know if it's for Representative Zellers or Mr. Ball. Does the bill, the way it's written, in any way open up video poker machines to be played in bars? And can you explain to me why or why not?
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Zellers,
it is my interpretation, no, but I would check with Ms. Long, as it's always good to check with your attorneys. But in my interpretation, no, it is not. That was a specific question that I asked.
Okay, Director Ball, would you like to answer that while we wait for Aaron Elizabeth has an answer?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barr, I believe that video poker would still be prohibited. This definition would leave intact the language in the statute that says a video game of chance is a game or device that simulates poker. So that would still be a video game of chance and be prohibited as a gaming device.
Thank you, Ms. Long. I just wanted to get that on the record.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for the presentation. Representative Zeller will renew his motion to move House File 791 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus policy bill. And thank you very much for being here and sharing the information with us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members.
Representative Kahn. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here and to learn all these new things. I actually did have a solution for the makers of the video game. I think if they just changed the animals to goats, wouldn't it work? It's exactly the same.
Thank you, Representative Kahn.
And you could just put little horns on the horse.
Representative Atkins, we'll ask you to move House File 1009.
I would be happy to.
For possible inclusion in the omnibus budget bill.
Okay.
Well, it could well be policy as well.
It could be.
I suppose we'll sort that out as we go, but for now we'll say the omnibus budget bill.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chairman, I do have a handout. But
okay, we'll get a page over there, and then Representative Kahn, if you could tell us what your bill does.
Okay, well, let me tell you a little bit about the background of how I thought about this bill. I was wandering through the airport at Amsterdam, and there I suddenly came upon this structure in the airport, which was a casino. And it might have been a much more full, I didn't have time to go into it, but it might have been a much more full-service casino than probably was envisioned here. But the interesting thing about this casino was that you could not get into it unless you had a boarding pass. And so one of the things that I'm not a supporter of most gambling bills. I've usually voted against gambling, including the lottery, considering that what it is a regressive tax on innumeracy or stupidity. In other words, people who can't do arithmetic end up paying a lot of money because they go into gambling establishments. The change that this bill makes is it becomes a progressive tax on innumeracy or stupidity, because if you take the cut of society of people who possess boarding passes at any moment, it is a distinct higher income bracket than the set of people who do not possess boarding passes. The other benefit of this bill is that many of the people passing through the airport are not Minnesota residents. And in recent times, from when I first started, after September 11th, when one has to go through much more intense security examinations, so people now come to the airport much earlier than they ever would have. And most of the time, you just go right through. I must admit, it was amazing to see my 2-year-old granddaughter just totally face down the TSA people when they tried to take her stuffed dog away from her and put it through the belt. The scream she let out made them immediately decide that no matter what was in that dog, they let her carry it. And but anyway, so people spend a lot more time around airports for various reasons. Having spent 5 hours in the airport the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, I think you could see people who are looking for anything to do. The bill is drawn up in the lottery because, as you people know much better than I do, that's the only form of casino gambling that the state can operate, which has to be through the lottery. So it is done through the lottery. There are two negative things that I've heard about this bill. First one is that it doesn't raise enough money to solve the whole budget problem. And the memo that I've passed out, and we have both Clint Harris from the lottery is here and Don Feeney, the research and planning director, you know, the amounts that are given are just a guess, but they're certainly a much better guess than I could give from the top of my head. The other negative thing that I've heard about is that it is the foot in the door to, you know, the state going into casino gambling. Well, I would call it maybe the toenail in the door or something like that. What it is it's, free money. It's not subject to abuse. It's much more security than you'd have anywhere else in the state unless you're a little kid carrying a stuffed dog. In order to be able to get in. The space in the airport, and you know, there is language that if the MAC can't reasonably find a place to do it, they don't have to do it. But you know, this airport is set up as opposed to some other airports where just about all of our commercial opportunities are beyond the place where you give a boarding pass. So you don't even need any kind of new security for that. You know, the bill was drafted by people who are much more know much more about how this should be set up than I do, and it's really drafted to fit into the lottery statute. And the memorandum that you have shows that we're looking at something, revenue after expenses, we're looking at is about $27 million a year. You know, as I said, it's not enough to solve the budget problem, but $27 million or $54 million a biennium is, by my plebeian thoughts, still some real money. And, you know, as I think it's totally free money to the state. I don't think it competes with anything else. So that's the... able to answer questions, and
okay.
People are here.
Do you have any testifiers on the bill?
No. I just, as I said, I've asked Mr. Feeney and Mr. Harris to be here in case there are questions.
There are questions. Questions for members? Representative Atkins.
Representative Pound, thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you have a fiscal note? I know we've got the memo, but I suspect that the memo is just what it is, which is sort of guesswork on the part of the lottery. Has a fiscal note been requested?
No, there is no fiscal note, and I guess if it goes on, you know, to the finance committee, you know, a chairman can request fiscal note. I don't even think that we have authors just doing fiscal. Doing fiscal notes, but if you note the way the bill is drafted, you have to advance the money from the general fund, but it must be paid back within 3 months of the opening of the casino. And so I think the fiscal note will say that it's zero. I don't think any of the economic analysis will show you that there would be no problem. There's got to be all kinds of economic analysis of what, when an installed slot machine makes up its cost. And my answer is very much sooner than 3 months. So I think there's no, I think the fiscal note is zero. You don't know. The fiscal note for cost to the state is zero. You know, again, better people than me would have to make an estimate of the revenue. You really have to get into discussions with the airport about how much space is available. I think it's completely, since everyone understands that the return in a casino per slot machine in terms of space is the highest possible, I don't think anyone would do anything. I don't think they'd ever contemplate blackjack tables or other things other than the slot machine. But I think those figures are easy to come out. I think that there's no chance it could cost the state anything.
Yeah. Thank you, Representative. Mr. Chair, if I might just suggest that a fiscal note be requested.
Absolutely, there will be.
Somewhat become a finance committee, I guess, with respect, and we're going to have a budget bill. I'm not convinced that the tax committee, based on you and I serve on the tax committee together, I'm not convinced that the tax committee is going to hear the gaming bills, based on what I've seen thus far, and I don't know who else would go through the revenues and the costs other than this little group of folks to work our way through that. My assumption, also based on the answer, you don't need to comment, but is that there is not a business plan associated with this. It doesn't sound like any of that work has been done yet.
No, okay. But you know, again, my guess is that if one were to move forward and to put this out to bid, there would be a lot of interest, and there would be a lot of people who would be interested in doing it as a partner if you wanted to go out and hire a... No. No, I don't get paid enough to work out those problems.
Just a point of clarification, all notes or all bills that would be considered for the omnibus budget bill will request a fiscal note on it. Representative Kahn, do you know how long the casino has been at the Amsterdam airport, by any chance?
No, I don't. It's been there quite a long time, and certainly I think I've seen it. I'm quite sure I've seen it almost 10 years ago or so. And it isn't, you know, I do remember getting a note from former lottery director Anderson, be able to find out all the information that he needed on anything. And I think he just called Amsterdam to find out about it. And one of the things which is it's part of a whole corporation of Amsterdam casinos. And it is the lowest revenue producer of any of those.
Okay.
I mean, it isn't, as I said, you can't ever think it would be a big revenue producer. But my argument, again, is that it is free money.
And, yeah, the reason I ask is because I happen to be there, and unfortunately I donated to their concern.
Just, well, you have more experience than me.
Just last December. But it was an extremely small facility. It had one roulette table as you walked into the front door, and then they had a number of slot machines, probably about 15, and then I believe they had two tables. And that was probably the extent of it. And my thoughts were, if it was really successful, I would have thought that they would have expanded it. And so I just was curious if you had any insight along those lines.
Well, for one thing, I think that there's no... one thing, I think it's highly unlikely that we would go to, I guess we don't do roulette, that we would go to any kind of table, any kind of card table. And the reason it is that most people who would be going to gamble in any sense would be people not going through the airport. Okay. And I can't say anything about it. I know that Mr. Anderson did have at that time some revenue figures, and they were not very good. But I think that this would be, I think that the best numbers for this would be the number of people through and the amount of revenue that one can expect from a slot machine. Maybe Las Vegas might be a better model.
Okay. Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Try to get through this without coffee. And Representative Conn, have you talked to anybody at the airport or MAC or Northwest or Sun Country or anybody?
No, I haven't. And it is kind of an interesting history about that, is that at one point when we decided, the committee that I chaired, when I chaired Government Operations and Gambling, we were the people who decided that we wanted to put, that there ought to be slot machines in the lottery. And I don't remember if the lottery came and told us that they weren't able to do it. And it was actually, we had to put a little bit of pressure on them. I don't know about this because, you know, they'll get, and again, I don't know how the lottery arranges its payment to vendors. I mean, that's something, you know, that would, but it was interesting because we did a bill that said, you know, they may do it, and that hung around for a couple of years, and they didn't do it, and then we finally decided that we do a bill that said that they shall do it. And those lottery stations at the airport, I thought it was the highest, and the memo now says that it's the second highest venue in the state. So the history for lottery was that we did have to put legislative pressure on them to agree to put the lottery in it. And I remember going to one of the, when we were doing this, I went to one of the most anti-gambling people, I think, in the House at that time, who was Wes Scoglin, you know, to make sure that he wasn't going to give us some trouble on this. He listened and he said, that's the only place in the state where they should be. And so I think that's the same. You know, it's not likely to be any kind of whatever problems one might think gambling causes, this addition to the airport is not likely to do that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, along those lines, could we ask someone from MAC probably to come down here and just... We've got a couple extra minutes, Mitch, so if you could just come down here and... Could you just tell us about the discussions that have occurred about a possible casino at the airport? Have there been any with MAC? And please state your name and identify who you represent.
Chairman Westberg, members of the committee, Mitch Killian with the Metropolitan Airports Commission. Our board has not taken a position on this bill. A couple of things that I can mention. First of all, as you know, and as Representative Conn testified, space is at a premium at the airport. It is very tight. I think the current bill says that we would just be required to lease them space. Most of our leases for concession revenue include a percentage of gross revenue. So where our concessionaires make more money, the airports commission makes more money. So the board members that have shown interest are definitely focused right in on that point. With regards to the discussion about the lottery going into the airports commission, I was part of that. And what occurred at that time was the Lions Club, the Airport Lions Club, was selling pull tabs at that time in the airport, and that went to benefit the Airport Foundation and did a lot of good projects at the airport. So the reluctancy to add the lottery was that was competition for money that was staying on the airport. So that was the history of that. So I think our board is open for discussion depending on what the legislature decides to move ahead with.
Okay, thank you. Any questions?
What about horse racing at the airport?
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Westerberg. I would just like Ms. Long to check with whoever's in charge at the Las Vegas airport, because they do have slot machines there, so when you're leaving, you can give them a little bit of extra money.
Or get.
Not usually.
Thank you. Okay, are there any other questions? Is there any other questions or comments? Anyone in the audience who'd like to speak for or against this bill? Just out of curiosity, since we have a couple extra minutes. Okay. In hearing none, Representative Adkins will renew his motion to lay over House File 1009 for possible inclusion in the omnibus budget bill. And thank you very much, Phil.
Thank you.
Okay, do we have an announcement? Tuesday, we're not on Wednesday. Members, just a quick announcement here as far as the next Gaming Division Committee meeting will be held on Tuesday. And we have a special guest speaker coming to talk to us a little bit from a senator, former senator, speaker of the House, or majority speaker of the Senate in Kansas, Lana Olin will be here, and she's had extensive experience in negotiating Indian gaming compacts, and so we're going to discuss that issue a little bit here on Tuesday next week. So another interesting day is planned. With that, we'll adjourn.